Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Kabaza, and for today, we're going to be exploring the world of internet calling, the world of phone, the world of voice minutes, that type of thing, as we enter the world of Talk 360. They are a platform that specializes in making it very easy for people to make affordable international calls. They've been around for a number of years now, and we're going to be talking to Dean Hine, and he's going to be giving us some insight into what they're currently doing. They recently secured $1.4 million in pre-Series A that they say is going to connect 7 million users in the African diaspora by 2025. So we're just going to be having that discussion, and I think just to see how things go from there. Dean, greetings to you today.
Good morning, Mudiwa. Good day to you and your listeners.
All right. So Dean is a co-founder and, MD for Africa at Talk 360. And I thought perhaps a good place for us to get a sense. We always ask when we talk to founders, if we can get the elevator pitch on the platform before we can launch into the conversation.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I think Talk 360 as a business or as a platform is really around providing affordable calls. In South Africa's case, is both local and international, because we are also playing in that local market in South Africa. And our value prop is quite simple. We allow the caller to have the app, needs to have the Talk 360 app, and it's a hybrid model of connectivity and credit or airtime. Which is specific Talk 360 airtime. And the recipient does not need to have the app, nor do they need to have a smartphone. So in a nutshell, we are connecting from the recipient side online and to the recipient side to be and can receive on the online on the offline environment, really allowing the recipient to connect to the nearest GSM tower to receive the call made from Talk 360.
All right. I think that gives us a sense of what's going on in the business. One of the things I'm most curious about, right, is that I consider myself a little bit of a techie. And I remember back in the day, I would spend a lot of time going through, app charts and that type of thing. And you'd see what's new, what's happening. And the Talk 360 app, and that icon is something that I've been seeing for a long time, especially even as an Android user for a long time. Even in my university days, that's why I asked before we started recording, I'd asked Dean, what was the year of founding? Because I was just checking to make sure that indeed I remember in my varsity days coming across this platform for the first time. So it made me curious when I saw this news of the pre-Series A. The thing I was most curious about, and I'm hoping that the answer to this question will help to shed some light around some of the funding realities that exist in the region, to say, how is it that a platform that's been around for this long and that has the user base that you have now only at a pre-Series A, funding round. I think let's get into that.
Yeah, thanks. It's actually quite a good question, but I think it's also a combination of a couple of things. I think if you remember in 2022, we actually raised $7 million. And that was really to fast track our growth and looking at some other strategies from the business. I think we did quite a lot of that. And I think when in 2022, if you looked at the finance or the funding market, it was quite, I'd call it Christmas, because there was a lot of funding that was happening at the time to most tech business, some which we, in my opinion, were also highly overvalued. And we saw a lot of money being pumped into tech businesses at that boom in 2022. And with that, I think there were some fundamental mistakes made, not only by us, but by the markets in general, by the entire tech ecosystem, is that it was grow at all costs. You'll see that the grow at all cost mentality can also be a bit counterproductive. One, it can be really disruptive because you're just focusing on growth. And two, it tends to come with also just, one of the things that we're, as entrepreneurs, you make is that for you to grow, sometimes you think your natural inhibition tells you that you need to increase your team. And sometimes that's not necessarily the first point of reference. And you'll see that a lot of in the tech market for the last couple of years, you've seen a lot of companies raising money. You've seen a lot of company talking strongly about aggressive growth. And it hasn't been the case. I mean, we've also seen the market dip a little bit in the last year or so. So we did that pre-seed funding in 2022. Did a lot of that fast growth mentality, has paid our school fees in that process. Some mistakes we could have avoided. And the market hasn't been easy for the last year or so, where the fundraising has not been that easy. And really what we're looking at from our side is a combination of one. We spent a lot of time in the last year really looking at our unit economics and looking at efficiencies rather than just growth in a business. Sometimes inefficiencies create more growth than trying to just capacitate. And really looked at our unit economics, looked at where we were going as a business, what our focus is in the business. And one of the things we came across was that we really focused on what we were doing right and doubling down on that. Which communities do we see growth from in terms of our international calling offering? So we've done a lot of that, and we really now have much better insights in our market cap, market share, and the communities where we need to be servicing this service or product to. And in light of that, what we're also doing with this raise is to, one, increase our runway, so extend a little bit of our runway to make sure that we can, if there are any issues in the market again, we have a bit of a buffer from a financial reserves perspective, that we have something in reserves that can keep us going. But most importantly, also to grow at that target we've set ourselves of 7 million by 2025.
All right. I think that gives us a sense on that end. When you're raising now, curious to understand, what's the valuation that you guys are raising at?
So we raise on the same valuation we had in 2022. So currently it was $30 million plus, I think just over 13,900,000 dollars. So that's the valuation that we've got currently, that we're raising at. I think we, because it is an internal round as well, we didn't really, with an internal round, it means that it's the existing funders of the initial fundraise that participated in this round. As people that have backed us, wholeheartedly within this journey, we literally just, did the valuation on the previous round's valuation as well.
All right. The reason I asked that question is because we have seen that for people, when you talk to people that were raising funds in 22, like you said, it was Christmas, versus 23 and into 24, valuations have taken, big hits. Some of the companies that were raising in 21, 22, some of those valuations have come off. So I was curious, to understand how you guys had been able to, maintain that 30 plus million dollar, valuation of yours.
Yeah, I think, fortunately or unfortunately for us as shareholders, we didn't get those really crazy valuations that were happening in 2022. Ours was still quite conservative in terms of how the valuation was done, and it was not a valuation done by us. It was derived from the due diligence done by the VCs, and we came to an amount that made sense to all parties.
Okay, cool. So when it comes to, I guess, an operation like Talk 360, maybe you could give us a sense of cash burn, right? For a business like yours, when you're raising funds like this, obviously there's a piece around reserves, like what you said now. But operationally, would be keen to understand what are the big drivers, for that pull, at your cash. And then, coupled with that is investment activities, right? Because you kind of have to take whatever you can get and split that between investment versus your current operation. So maybe you could talk to us about how that split looks like.
Yeah, I think our model, so let me just go through a bit of an a structure of the business, because then it'll make sense if I when I start talking about certain things. So we're actually a South African Dutch owned company. So we are our IP is housed in the Netherlands. So our group entity is within the Netherlands, and we've got subsidiaries that are wholly owned by the Dutch holding company. So the subsidiary being one in South Africa, one in Nigeria, one in India. And we have those are all wholly owned by the group entity. So at group entity, we do biggest function of group is two things. One, obviously holding the IP is the development of that IP and evolution of that IP. So the development, most of which is done in the Netherlands, but we've got developers all over the world. Nigeria, for example, we've got some in the Netherlands itself. We had some in Canada before. I think that contract didn't continue, but we've tried to spread our tech team as much as possible remotely, because it is also, if you look at the development requirements of most people, most of these software developments, such that most of them prefer this remote working, and there's a lot of recruitment happening globally for developers. So you find that in most cases, your hybrid model for developers makes more sense. So we've got the dev team that's spread in the Netherlands and in some countries that looks at the product development. So the tech stack that we are now currently doing. We have South Africa as an operation, which also has what that we call our rep or agent model. So our agent model has its own platform. That platform is developed from South Africa. So one of our biggest costs then becomes the product itself. So the tech stack and the development thereof in terms of the evolution and trying to make sure that this we have multiple releases to keep the product fresh and keep the stickiness within that product. So that's one of the big cost centers that you have in terms of this operation. The other big cost centers, we have a cost of sale when it comes to what we would call wholesale minutes. And if you remember what I spoke to when I explained to you the value proposition of connecting from online and receiving the call offline and connecting to the nearest GSM tower, we have to pay for what we would deem as, in South Africa, that would be called locally an interconnect fee. But in the international market, it's wholesale minutes. Because for the receiver to receive that call to connect to the nearest GSM operator, there's a fee linked to that for usage of that tower. That then becomes your wholesale minutes. So you'll see that our rate for each country is not the same, because those are also determined of what costs are we incurring in connecting a call in a Nigeria, in a UK, for example. Those then determine also our retail price of what we would charge our end consumers. So that's quite a big chunk of our cost of sales. And we strive, we look at a business as a business to a healthy margin of about 50% as a business. But that is our goal. But it's not always the case, because there's some markets where you want to be competitive. And in being competitive, you might not be reach that 50% threshold. But you then look at it from a low margin, high volume perspective and how you can actually enter those markets. So that's another cost element that we have in terms of your cost of sales. Then you've got obviously the people. So the staff would be a part of that. Like, we've got 60 staff members all over the world. Like I said, the dev team is there. We've got some staff in the Netherlands, in South Africa, and we've got some in small countries like Suriname and we've got some in Egypt, in Kenya. So there's a pool of staff all over the world that we also have to take in consideration as part of our cost element. Third, and then the last and not least is probably one that for any app developer, is the one that you always cry when you see that. It's the payments that we have to pay to Apple Store and Play Store. Because
the 30%.
Yes, and that one where we have no control over or no say on. So that's the other part that we also have to look at, because we support online offline payment mechanism. So online, we also have Play Store. So we have to give Apple and Play Store their share in terms of their business model on every transaction that we do on that Play Store, App Store that Apple and Google Play take as well. So yeah, those are generally your biggest cost. You know, there's some other platforms we use internally that we pay licensing fees, but those are the significant costs that I would say we have at our disposal for running this organization.
All right. Actually, you know, I love the detail and understanding how I guess the mechanics work from a finance point of view, and how you guys have I guess played the game between your fixed and your variable costs from that point of view, and also spreading them across different offices. And you know, all the while, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about is for the user base that you have at over 2 million, you're still running a relatively lean, you know, type of organization. Yeah, so, you know, great to see and hear something like that. Now I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure that you've heard many, many times, right? The market that you're in, right, how do you see it shaping up over time, right? And I ask that because we exist in a world where voice over IP is now a well-established situation, right? If you sit just on the consumer VoIP situation, there's so many platforms, Telegram, WhatsApp, FaceTime. I mean, people even call each other inside of Instagram these days, right? You and I are having a call on a meeting platform, the Zooms, the MS Teams, the Google Meets. There's so many options that are allowing people to connect, you know, cross border. And even at the bottom of the pyramid seems to be, you know, well serviced from that point of view. A lot of companies have moved over to some type of voice over IP protocol of some sort, where the organization, you think you're making a landline call, but it's being switched through the internet and it goes wherever it needs to go, right? So against all of that, right, who's the user for Talk 360? And what are they? The most obvious thing is obviously the cost benefit that they're getting from Talk 360. But I guess what I'm trying to make people understand is we all have this idea in our heads that everyone has a WhatsApp, everyone has a, you know, all of these other platforms. But maybe you could talk to us about a different type of reality, because you've been in business for 8 years and you continue to be so. So, you know, how are you still in business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and it's a fair question. I think it's one that when we were doing our pitch in 2022, it was a common theme in terms of investors asking, but well, how are you guys relevant? Because there's all these different platforms that you have at our disposal. And I always say this, and I mean, I speak to quite a lot of guys who ask me this, and I always say that as long as there's a problem, there's a solution to be given, and that's, for me, that's the fundamental of any tech services. If a platform, that what we are trying to solve in this digital world or digital space is solving a problem that exists within individuals, communities, or business, and that for me is a fundamental of it. And yes, you can. There's a lot of the peer-to-peer guys which provide free services over VoIP, voice over IP, within their ecosystem. So within the peer-to-peer environment, from one app to another, there's a lot of those, and you've mentioned a few of those. Now, the reality on the ground is very simple, is that, you know, not everybody, in specifically in third world and some of the developing countries, has proper internet experience or internet connectivity. And secondly, yes, the smartphone penetration is increasing. Some don't have smartphones. And that's still the reality that we live in most of the underdeveloped or the developing countries. In fact, it's such that if in some countries, you know, I mean, I know that I've seen this in Germany alone, that, you know, you drive out of the big cities, you drive 5 miles, 10 miles out of those cities, you know, there is no connectivity. The connectivity is really poor outside of the urban areas. But it also stems from how the telecommunications sector was built up, where, you know, it is quite a big capital intensive business, telecommunications, which requires quite a lot of infrastructure. But the infrastructure is such that is congested or built within the areas where there's a lot of economic activity for return on investment. It is that what it is, that you'll find that connectivity happens in the big cities or the urban areas. Outside of that, it's not that great. So with that being, having said that, the experience of peer-to-peer services is reliant on connectivity being good from both the receiver and the caller side. Now, if you look at the Talk360 business case and you ask me what the Talk360 user is, I remember when I started this business, I went to Soweto and I saw an uptake of all these different communities that were called using to call. And I went and asked a gentleman in Soweto. He gave me a simple answer to my question. He said, "I use Talk360 for two reasons. One, I can buy you guys at any parlor shop as your airtime is available in 500,000 point of sales in South Africa. Two, the country that I'm calling to, my mother doesn't live in the urban area. She lives outside of that urban area in a remote place where one, internet connectivity is almost next to non-existent. And secondly, she does not have a smartphone. So in a nutshell, what we are doing as a value proposition is we've come in between your traditional telecoms companies who created the GSM network to call anywhere in the world. However, they tend to be a little bit more expensive. Then you've got on the other end of the stick is the peer-to-peer services that allow you to call via the ecosystem with connectivity on both sides required and free. Then we then come in between that as a solution, say, we're now bridging that gap between your traditional telecommunications company, which are relatively expensive for international calling, and the peer-to-peer services where connectivity or internet access is still a challenge in some parts of the world.
Makes perfect sense. And I like the way that you, I guess, describe the situation. And it is a reality, what you said now. I think there's often a stat that is given around the rate of mobile penetration in Africa. And, when a person drills down into the numbers, you then realize where some of the dis there's a difference between what we think is happening versus the actual reality on the ground. And I think they say that in that, I'm trying to remember the exact number, but that on the African continent, you have an over 80% penetration of the mobile phone, but a less than 50% penetration of the smartphone. So yes, people have mobile phones, but not everyone has the type of phones that that you're speaking about, which speaks to I guess the exact point that you're talking about. So I guess that hybrid system continues to be I guess the situation that that you find yourself there. So from an opportunity point of view and addressable markets and whatever it is that you guys are attacking at the moment, right? Where's the growth? Does the growth continue to happen in this in this hybrid space that you've been playing in, where you come in between your typical GSM providers versus your typical voice over IP guys? Or, are there other aspects? Because, maybe there's a fintech player around your airtime, all of these things. Like, how are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I think no, that's a good one, because actually that's a very good question, because I remember you can have a you part of solving the problem that we're doing with tech is making sure that it's also accessible. So whatever solution you're providing must also be accessible. Okay, and just to extend that a little bit further is that we've seen this in the past where a lot of digital products launch in a market, but actually don't penetrate that market because accessibility is quite difficult. And I'll give you a simple example of that accessibility. We're a paid service, and some of our biggest customer base in South Africa and in the UK, but probably a better business case in South Africa, is foreign nationals that want to call home. Okay, and with that persona or that user in our stable users, most of them are the underbanked or do not have banking facilities. Now, it would be counterproductive to then have this as an online payment service and try to offer it to the informal market. So that accessibility play, then we have created what we call our own airtime, Talk360 airtime, which you can buy at any informal shop on a cash basis And you can use that voucher to top yourselves up in the app itself. So what we then created also opened up a pool of a completely new market purely based on that offline cash capability, which we are offering as a mechanism to top up. We do support online mechanisms all over the world, but that offline capability, for example, for the South African market, is a big a revenue generator for us in South Africa, with seeing almost 70% of our revenue coming from cash.
And when it comes to that, I think just an extension of what you're talking about, what you call this, what you're talking about right now is you guys are sitting at roughly, let's call it 4 million or so users right now, and you've got this ambitious goal to almost double that to 7 million by next year, right? What makes that happen?
And I think I touched a little bit on it. We've got paying customers in 149 countries. But with time and insights, you start looking at how do you define the product for specific. Because when you're trying to, with paying customers in 149 countries, it is quite difficult to cater for so many markets in terms of your offering, your product offering. So we've in the last couple of years identified where we have a good user bases or good communities that we can service. Double down and grow quite quickly. The fundamentals thereof are done. Like, for example, we've also extended our user offering that last week we launched two languages in our app, Portuguese in the app. So we now support Portuguese. We support one of the first East African languages, which is Amharic, which is an Ethiopian language. So I think we'll be one of the first apps in the world outside of the local Ethiopian apps to support Amharic. And simply because we're now understanding that community is one big part of our stable in terms of users and people that consume the app calling back home. So we're doubling down on those communities. And we've seen over periods that this is where we're seeing a lot of these growths. And that's why we're aggressive and bullish and say we will grow much quicker there, because I think the fundamentals or the groundwork of how to have that growth have already been established. Now it's just about executing that playbook that we've established over about 2 to 3 years.
Okay, makes sense. And the other one, when it comes to making all of that happen, is do you currently have enough runway to make you and I are having a funding discussion. So, as much as we were talking about reserves and runway earlier on, do you currently have enough runway to make that dream a reality in 25?
It's yes, and a very confident yes, because even at the time of our fundraise, we were a decent, like I said, there were some changes we made to the business, which some difficult decisions we had to make, and it was purely for the health of the business. So those interventions we took helped to make sure that, one, well, our cost base is reduced quite significantly, extending our runway a little bit further. And this fundraising specifically was for two elements. One is to increase, give us a bit more cushion on that runway that we already had, and also to have a balancing effect of having a healthy runway, but also have some reserves that allows you to also test and really, if you want to grow at the numbers that we're talking about, you need to have some injection of capital into the product to be able to reach those bullish numbers. So yeah, we're just really making sure that the runway is extended a little bit further. And in anticipation of if anything in the market goes wrong, we also have some reserves at our disposal. I mean, you've seen in the last 18 months, Mudiwa, that it's been brutal for tech companies. I mean, some companies that have been raised a lot of money have closed shop. It's simply because of this runway discussion that we're having right now. So we're creating that financial health and creating a much more extended runway, just in case if we had to redo the Series A raise, it takes a bit longer. We still have, a bit of a cushion for us to be able to continue operating our business. We do also, obviously, also have an ambitious goal with those kind of numbers to ensure that at some point in 2025, if we do reach those targets, then we are looking at breaking even as well.
All right. And I like the fact that you've brought the word break even into the discussion, because literally the next thing I was about to ask is at what point do the commercials turn? to the point of sustainability for you guys?
Yeah, I think in some of our subsidiaries, that's already moved. That goalpost has moved from cash negative to cash positive. It's obviously, you know, a bulk of the investment in terms of product and our IP sits within the Netherlands, which consumes a lot of the costs. So at a group level, if we can consolidate that at group and get to cash positive at a group level, that's the aim. But our subsidiaries are some of them also looking at already are cash positive.
All right, great. Now, Dean, before we let you go, I think it's always great to know and understand the people that we are talking to. We've spoken quite a bit about the problem, the business, the drivers, you know, some of the commercial aspects, valuations, all of this stuff. But for yourself as Dean, how did you first, you know, stumble upon Talk 360, and what's the background, you know, that informs your ability to enter this market?
It's actually a funny story. I stumbled on this by chance. I mean, I think my background is when I studied IT, I was a software developer for years. But you know, I come from a family of entrepreneurs. I've always known that part of my life would kick in at some point. Done some work as an entrepreneur, and with entrepreneurship, you know, this, I always say this entrepreneur, if you haven't failed a couple of times, you haven't really, you know, gotten your stripes. You learn from those mistakes, and you have to, you know, keep going. And I stumbled by on the spot, but like I said, it was Talk 360 brand was launched in 2016, but the IP and the platform had actually belonged to a company before, which was facing challenges because they were working solely on the European market. And with the advent of peer-to-peer services, the service became irrelevant for a developed country because most people have smartphones and they all have connectivity is quite good. And I stumbled upon my co-founder in 2015 as he was about to wrap up the business. I said, no, we can't do that. Let's look at this differently and let's take it forward. And we listened, and we spent a bit of time in 2015 re-looking at what my proposition was, and in 2016 we operated with a different focus in terms of how the positioning of the brand is, and here we are today.
All right. Last thing, you hinted at it earlier on within the South African context to say. And I think it ties into what you've just said now about the fact that in its previous iteration it was about to fold in Europe because the dynamics in a developed market are much different. For the South African context, you mentioned the fact that you have a lot of foreign nationals that are, you know, looking to call home, and you know, you've got people on the other side that might not necessarily have the same infrastructure available, whether it's the device or the internet access itself. So in your, let's call it 100, and I think you said 49 countries that you're operating in, how important has the diaspora, you know, just been? And I'm more concerned about the African diaspora being to the development of your platform.
It has been that was the market positioning, and it's not necessarily just the African diaspora. So I think in 2015, when we looked at how do we reposition the product, it was focused on the diaspora, not only just African, but also Asian. Middle East is challenging because in some countries web doesn't work in the Middle East. So, but Asian and Africa was our biggest focus. And I'll give you some examples of personas, okay? So that we practical examples of real. Real life people that we can relate to. In South Africa, as South Africa is a really funny market because we actually see that in South Africa, in fact, 55% of our traffic in South Africa is people calling locally. So people making calls from South Africa to South Africa because we're quite competitive in terms of pricing for mobile numbers, and that's the traffic. And it doesn't the traffic doesn't necessarily. Have a direct correlation to the revenue, so it can't be. It's not 55% of our revenue because of the price point. You know, South Africa, we charge less 49 cents a minute, but in another country we could charge 3 rand, where we're seeing quite a lot of uptake. Revenue-wise, we'd be collecting more, but we might not be doing the same amount of minutes. So 55% of our minutes come from South Africa, locally to local minutes in South Africa. And then the next persona you're looking at is your foreign national and calling home. So East Africa is one big area that we see a big uptake. West Africa is another that we see a big, big uptake with people calling home from there. And then in the UK, thanks to Brexit, there's been a very big influx of African and mostly African nurses going to work for the NHI in the UK. And some of our biggest users in there, I mean, the new market that we've stumbled upon has been that nursing community that comes from the African diaspora and needs to go home. It's been a new market that we've stumbled upon about 24 months ago, which we're also seeing a big uptake there. So there's different personas for different markets that you see that shape up for us. But yeah, it is generally the diaspora market, a combination of both African and Asian that we see that seems to be the big cater for in the market.
All right. That's how we end off today's discussion. It has been really great just understanding what's going on, in the communications market, specifically for international calls, talking to Talk360 just around the shape of their business and how it's evolved over time. In its previous iteration, things were not, going quite well. But, someone like Dean, he says that he stumbled upon them by accident and was able to convince, his co-founder that actually there's a different way in which we can approach this. And that seems to have paid off and is paying dividend now. 4 million users with the goal of reaching 7 by 2025. And he was also just giving us some insight into the parts of the business, that are actually producing the money, places that are taking up cash resources, and how they try to remain prudent in such an environment. I think in his words, he did mention the fact that whenever you're able to raise capital in the way that they have, it's quite tempting to automatically add people to a team. But he's saying that they've tried to be prudent and try to run a lean operation. They've got about 60 people, if I remember correctly, across a number of different operations, South Africa, UK, South Africa, Netherlands, dynamic, but also a number of offices in places like your Nigeria, like your India, making sure that you're servicing all of your different regions, and then giving us also insight into some of the mechanics around making a call, what's actually happening step by step. In that chain, when you initiate a call from your app and it terminates on someone else's device, and how those dynamics have actually led to the market opportunity that's there, because not everyone has access to the same devices. And even though the question around all of these peer-to-peer platforms continues to be there, he says that for as long as there's a problem, you can always offer a solution. So that's how we end off for today's discussion. We're talking to Dean Hine. He is a co-founder and he is the MD for Africa over at Talk360. Dean, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Mudiwa. Thanks for your time as well and your listeners.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.